Talk Live. We are coming to you live from the New Hampshire Liberty Forum. It's Mark with you.
And Guard.
And we've been doing interview after interview after interview. And we've got one that's scheduled for to go three segments here, and it's with Dr. David Friedman. So if you want to give call in for with your questions for Dr. David Friedman, you're welcome to do that at 800-259-9231. It's 800-259-9231. That's the SACL CAI phone line. And
you know, Mark, as we introduce Dr. Friedman, what's fascinating is we could easily fall into, I could fall into all sorts of memories of being a teenager, maybe 20, picking up Dr. Friedman's book, Machinery of Freedom, and thinking about how amazing it is that over time you get to actually talk to these people and become familiar with them, meet them as real people. But there's so much stuff to soak up. Dr. Friedman, welcome to the program. Thank you very much for joining us on Free Talk Live.
Happy to be here.
And it is a great honor. You've been very influential for so many people, and it's good to have you here at the Liberty Forum. Boy. Terrific.
Yeah, today you gave a speech on market failure and how market failure exists, and people that deny market failure are denying reality. However, market failure is significantly better than government failure, and government failure happens significantly more often.
That's not the way I would have put it. I would have said that it's a mistake to assume that market failure is about markets, that market failure is a general problem in human beings coordinating their activities. It occurs on markets. It occurs in a political system, and it occurs in a variety of other contexts. It is a more serious problem for the political alternatives to the free market than it is for the free market, but it's a problem for both.
One of the things is it's fascinating that you should talk this way, and I did not get to see your speech, unfortunately. I was working. David, what fascinates me is markets are constantly the nature of the market. Is the information loop system that it feeds back on itself, and so the participants, the assorted people in the market, are constantly making adjustments if they do make mistakes.
But I'm not talking about mistakes.
That's it.
What I mean by market failure is a situation where rational behavior by individuals does not lead to rational behavior by the group.
Yes.
Now, you gave an example which I felt was awesome, which was the situation of a foot soldier.
The example that I started with, I think I gave a couple, was to imagine that it's 1,000 years ago, and you're one of a line of soldiers with spears, and they're all pointing in one direction, because in that direction there's a bunch of other soldiers on horseback with lances who are charging at you. And the question is, what should you do? Should you run or should you stand?
And I would think, at least when you watch movies, most of them stand there with the spears stuck forward.
And the first calculation you do is to say, if we stand, with luck we can stop their charge. Some of us will get killed, but most of us will survive. Whereas if we run, horses can run faster than we can. And the mistake in that argument is that I'm asking what we should do, not what I should do.
Right.
That I, as an individual soldier, don't control the men to my right and my left. If everybody else stands and I run, since I'm only one man out of 5,000 or so, it won't have much effect on the chance that the charge will be stopped and I won't get killed. And if everybody else is running, I'd better run first or else I'm certain to get killed. Therefore, it is in my rational interest to run. It's in everybody else's rational interest to run, and almost all of us get killed when we might have survived if we had stood. So that's a striking example of a situation where people are not making a mistake. Each one is correctly calculating his interest, but my action affects you as well as me. Your action affects me as well as you. Each of us calculates on the effects on himself, and therefore I take an action which benefits me and harms the rest of you. Everybody else does the same thing, and we're all worse off. I ran through several other examples that I would argue that's what market failure really means. And there are some situations on the free market that work that way. There are many situations on the political marketplace that work that way. And there are other situations.
Yeah. Right, because the difference, I guess, with in a marketplace, if something fails, and certainly we've seen businesses fail and things, and that's not exactly what you're talking about. But
it's not at all what I'm talking
about. Right. But if a government has a market failure, as it were, it's a monopoly situation. You have no way to sort of avoid dealing with it.
Frequently in the market case, what market failure means is not a business fails, but a business doesn't exist. That the typical case of market failure is where there is some product or service that would be worth producing, where the value to the consumers is greater than the cost of producing it, and it doesn't get produced. So your point about that companies can fail really has nothing to do with that. So
understood.
If you think about what economists refer to as a public good problem, and just as market failure isn't really about markets, public goods doesn't, to an economist, mean goods that the government produces. It means goods where the producer can't control who gets them. So that a radio broadcast or a variety of other things, a flood control dam, let's say, benefits everybody downstream whether or not he chipped in to pay for the dam. And so the argument is that even if a flood control dam would produce benefits of $10 million for people downstream and only costs $5 million to build, since the entrepreneur who builds it isn't in a position to say to each person downstream,
you don't pay me,
you'll get flooded, he therefore may be unable to raise the money. So the typical market failure problem is one where something is worth producing and not produced. And in the political context, one of the most important forms of market failure is what economists call rational ignorance, which means the fact that voters have no incentive to gain all the information they would need to gain in order for democracy to work the way it works in our classrooms, the way it's supposed to work.
They'd have to devote so much time to it that they would be able to do the regular job.
Maybe not that much. It would take a lot of time and effort to figure out how their representative voted on each bill, how he should have voted, and so forth. And they get no benefit from it because my single vote is very unlikely to change the outcome.
Yeah.
And if by a very unlikely chance it changes the outcome, then I'm sharing that benefit with everybody else. I'm getting a small fraction. So it's not in my rational interest to be an informed voter.
Speaking with David Friedman, your website, it's daviddfriedman.com.
Yes, if I'd applied for it about 3 months earlier, I could have gotten it without the middle initial.
All right. Well, it's the marketplace in a way.
Yes.
David, a question. Obviously, no system is perfect. And so the question is, what addresses these problems best and what causes and exacerbates these problems? And clearly, those of us who look at the free market versus government, we have an argument that says government exacerbates these problems. Government presents more opportunities for these failures to occur and spreads the failures onto more people in many instances. With the marketplace, do you see that the market, for example, the example you gave with the soldiers, that's a final problem for those guys?
Mm.
In many cases, in markets, this might be analogous to some other groups of soldiers seeing what happened with those guys. Would that be a possibility?
It's not the group of soldiers. There is, in fact, a solution to that problem, which has itself become a cliche, namely burning your bridges behind you. That one solution to that problem for the general is that he marches his army across a bridge, lines them up, and then has a couple of people burn the bridge. And now the soldiers say, well, if we stand, we might survive. If we run, we certainly won't survive, so we have to stand.
So you're changing the setup of the game.
That's right. But it's true, there are lots of cases where you can change the situation in a way that reduces or eliminates market failures. There are others where you can't. So the mistake I think that supporters of the market sometimes make is to try to claim the problem doesn't exist rather than to say, yes, it exists. But it ultimately exists because someone is making a decision where other people are bearing some of the costs or getting some of the benefits. That can happen in the market, as in my flood control
dam.
Sure,
absolutely.
But that's the normal situation on the political system, that most people, whether you're voting or whether you're a representative or whether you're a bureaucrat, the decisions you make mostly are imposing costs on other people.
And the incentives of those people who would be voluntarily entering into such a group would they would be incentivized to try to investigate. Would they or would they not be incentivized to try to investigate to check the possible risks
more than
government
would? Are you talking
now about
a political system or
in a voluntary market system? Would they be more incentivized than in the government system to check and say, well, let's see what problems we might run into?
I would have said that in a market, if there is a way of solving the problem, it is likely to be profitable because the problem means that there's something worth producing that's not being produced. If you can figure out a way of producing it and getting a reasonable amount of the benefit, that's to your benefit, but it may or may not be doable.
Free Talk Live, you can call in with your questions to Dr. David Friedman at 1-800-259-9231. That's 800-259-9231. Dr. Friedman is probably the premier anarcho-capitalist thinker of our time.
Attention, active and separated U.S. military personnel. This message is just for you. You're entitled to benefits that are not available to the general public. You deserve them. Your family deserves them. And we want to make sure you know about them.
This is Tim Lewis of iFreedom Direct and a veteran of Operation Iraqi Freedom. Did you know VA programs can allow you to buy a home with no down payment? Or refi with cash out up to 100% of your home's equity? And, because of your service to your country, it's usually easier to qualify for a VA loan than a conventional loan.
On your feet!
And get all the details at varadio.com.
iFreedom Direct Corporation is a private lender approved by the VA and licensed in most states. In certain states, restrictions and limitations apply. For a current list of licenses, disclosures, and all benefits, go to varadio.com or call 800-900-VA-LOAN. varadio.com.
Who is Sam Andy? Sam Andy Foods is life insurance in a can. Life insurance you can eat. Sam Andy Foods has been serving loyal customers worldwide for over 50 years. Why so long? Simple. Sam Andy Foods have perfected the taste and quality of low-moisture foods. Foods that last 15 to 25 years. And that's made us an industry leader among families, sportsmen, outdoorsmen, churches, schools, people living in remote areas, U.S. troops in wartime, and many others. Sam Andy is America's leading supplier of over 100 high-quality, low-moisture products and everything you need to survive in any emergency. Visit SamAndy.com today for your free full-color catalog and free trial subscription to the Survival Times newsletter. That's SamAndy.com. Just like it sounds, SamAndy.com. Or call toll-free 1-888-331-0358. Your one-stop shop for everything your family needs to prepare for any emergency. Sam Andy Foods. Life insurance in a can.
Jim Newcomer with Midas Resources, talking today about change. Not the change we were promised by President Obama, but the reality that we must face in these changing economic times. With our national debt currently exceeding $12.5 trillion and our unfunded liabilities totaling over $107 trillion, the value of the U.S. dollar continues its slide into oblivion. There's still time to ensure your financial security with precious metals, but you need to act today. Call me, Jim Newcomer, at 800-686-2237, extension 104, and we can explore how Midas Resources can help you secure your financial future. With our government continuing to find new ways to spend our money at the expense of our children and grandchildren, there's still time to acquire a true hedge against inflation with precious metals. Call me, Jim Newcomer, at 800-686-2237, extension 104, and we'll discuss how you can take physical possession or convert your IRA into precious metals before it's too late. 800-686-2237, extension 104, and make the commitment today to retain the security you worked a lifetime to establish.
Spring is here, growing season. The economy is not getting any better. In fact, it's getting worse. Think about it. At this rate, how will your life be in a month or even a year? Maybe you've been putting things off, but the time to act is now. The country is running out of food. You need to get your seeds before it's too late. At OrganicaSeed.com, you'll find one of the largest online selections of heirloom seeds, survival seed packs, as well as the giant vegetable seed collections that can feed you and your family for years. Grow your very own fresh vegetables, wheatgrass, fruits, herbs, rice, tea, coffee, and tobacco. With detailed growing guides available to you at no charge, you can maximize your harvest and investment. And the best part? All orders ship within 24 hours. So head over to OrganicaSeed.com. That's OrganicaSeed.com. OrganicaSeed.com.
You're listening to Free Talk Live on the Genesis Communications Network and freetalklive.com. Call in at 1-800-259-9231.
Free Talk Live, we are coming to you live from the New Hampshire Liberty Forum, and it's Mark with you.
Oh, there you are, Gar.
And it's Gar.
And it's, I want to tell you real quick about the world's largest machine gun shoot and military gun show. It is April 9th through the 11th at Knob Creek Gun Range. It's fun for the whole family with machine guns and flamethrowers for rent, helicopter rides, and 800 tables showcasing handguns, rifles, more and more. It opens at 9 a.m., $10 per person at knobcreekrange.com. That's knobcreekrange.com. We have with us Dr. David Friedman, and you're a premier economist, and we've been talking about economic stuff and market failure and things like that. And I've got a call for we've got a call that's come in. It's Dave from Virginia calling in on 94.1. Dave, are you there?
I'm going to grab those headphones there, David.
Yes, I'm here.
And we'll see if we get David on the line.
Have we got David?
Yes, I'm here.
Dave in Virginia, going once.
Yes.
Going twice.
Nope. I'm here, I'm here.
There he is. Dave, what's your question?
Hello?
Something wrong with the phone lines coming in. Yep, we'll see if he can call.
Sorry,
what a surprise on a remote broadcast. I have a question, Dr. Friedman. So you were talking during the break about societies that have existed without monopoly coercive governments. Can you give give me some examples?
Sure. There have been a variety of what we would think of as relatively primitive societies that were what anthropologists refer to as stateless societies. And one of the Indian tribes, and I was just trying to remember the name because I confused them, but it was whichever of the Plains Indians wasn't Cheyenne or Kiowa.
Okay.
In the southern Great Plains were a society that had nothing you could recognize as a government. Basically, the sense in which they had a chief was that an individual could say, I'm going to have a raid and go attack Texas or go attack Mexico. Anybody want to come along?
Uh-huh.
And he was then the chief of that war party until they got back. And anybody who stayed in the war party was supposed to follow his orders, but they could all leave. But there was nobody who, like a government, had the job of ordering other people around.
And no conscription, nothing like that?
No, there was no conscription. It was a society where warfare was both profitable and high status. It was a militarily very effective society.
Sounds like the Crow.
It's not the Crow.
Okay.
They held up expansion across Texas for about 20 years, despite a relatively small population compared to the year to the whites and less good weaponry. And so that would be one example.
Okay.
And I'm not an anthropologist, but certainly those aren't uncommon in the historical record. I don't know, however, of anything like a large, modern, developed society without a government, although I think it would be a fine idea.
would we be remiss in saying then, David, that those people who would be critical of the stateless society, in that they say it will always devolve into constant warfare, would they be correct? I think about examples like you mentioned Viking Age Iceland and the Goddard system, more of a religious sort of system.
It wasn't a religious society, particularly.
Interesting.
When it converted from paganism to Christianity, yeah. I think fewer than 10 people were killed in the conflict over doing that.
Now,
so
their system was based on the Goddard system. They had a bundle of rights that essentially they could...
We're talking now about Iceland... basically from about the 9th century on, that the history of Iceland starts out in Norway.
Yeah.
That you had a Norway that consisted of a bunch of small kingdoms with not very powerful kings. And a man called Harald Haarfagr, who was one of the kings, started conquering all the others and put together what we think of as the Kingdom of Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of the people who lived in Norway didn't like this result. The Norwegians at the time had two major professions, farming and piracy. and so a lot of the ones who didn't like it loaded up their longboats with themselves, their relatives, and as much of the farm stock as they could fit, and set off for Iceland, which had been recently discovered.
Sure.
And that happened in 870 A.D., In 930 A.D., they ended up setting up a set of institutions, which then finally collapsed only in the 1260s. So it lasted for something over 300 years.
And if I'm mistaken, hopefully I'm not mistaken, it was based on, and I think I got this from yours, it might have been one of the documents on Viking Age Iceland. They had the Goddard system, but also basically those who built temples,
that's where
had a judicial system within...
That's a misleading way of putting it.
Okay.
That is, they had a system in which there were a set of people, 39 people. Gothi is the singular, Gothar is the plural.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually translated chieftain, but that's very misleading because it wasn't a tribal system.
Mm-hmm.
And what a Gothi had was a bundle of rights that meant that an ordinary Icelander plugged into the court system through a single Gothi. So that individual farmer basically selected one of these 39 who he'd be connected to. He could change if he did, they didn't get along. And then if he was in a legal dispute, what court the dispute ended up in would depend on who his goatee is and who the other person's goatee was. So it's a little bit like sort of state citizenship, if you think about cases of that sort.
Okay, now we do have Dave from Virginia, and I wanted to get that question. Dave?
And I'd better get my headphones on.
All right. Excellent. Dave?
Yes, do you hear me?
Gotcha now.
Great. My question basically is a little background. I'm an engineer. I own a business. I have an MBA, and I have found it incredibly difficult to shop for health insurance for my employees. There are so many different plans and so many different premiums and so many different deductibles and maximum out-of-pocket and so forth. So basically my question is this. Wouldn't you agree that when a certain industry is so confusing, such as financial, banking, and insurance, that your average consumer or even your above-average consumer cannot understand it well enough to comparison shop, wouldn't that introduce a significant amount of inefficiency in that market?
Well, that could certainly be a cost. On the other hand, if it was really that large a cost, you would think that there would be firms that would sort of standardize their products and try to offer simpler plans and so forth. Now,
why would they try to standardize their product so that they can be compared to another product? It seems like the insurance and finance industry is just taking advantage of this and getting incredibly bloated in our country.
Well, on the other hand, you observe in lots of areas that you do get standardization. If you think about computers or digital cameras, they often use the same terms to describe them. You know, how many megapixels is it? What's the zoom? And so forth. Mm-hmm. And you want to do that because the customer is going to say, if I can't make any sense out of what you're selling, I'll buy from somebody who I can make sense out of. Now, the health insurance is complicated by the fact that it's a heavily regulated industry, that what they are allowed to provide is going to depend on state law, and I suppose in the near future probably on federal law as well. But I don't see that standardization is a reason why you need some kind of interference, because where customers value standardization, then those people who standardize will get customers, and those who don't won't. Yeah, you know, think about firearms, for example. Practically nobody makes a .23 caliber rifle. At least I haven't seen any out recently.
Nor have I. Thank you, Dr. Friedman. We'll be back with you. And it's Free Talk Live. Keep listening.
How would you feel with normal blood pressure? How would you feel with a normal cholesterol reading without the drugs? What if you could avoid bypass surgery? Would it not be nice to have your heart beat regularly again? To have a sex life again? All these benefits and more can be yours when your body heals itself with the assistance of Heart and Body Extract. But please, don't take our word for it. Listen to what our customers say.
I've been on the Heart and Body Extract since 2006 and will remain on it for life. Thank you, Heart and Body Extract.
Read more of these amazing testimonials at hbextract.com. Your effective 100% organic herbal treatment for heart and body health is now available at hbextract.com. Get Heart and Body Extract at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. Look for free bonus 1213 at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. Heart and Body Extract comes with a 100% ironclad money back guarantee. Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract today.
Afraid to answer it? Afraid to answer your door? Did you know that debt settlement, bankruptcy, and attorneys will cost you about 10 times more than you would legally be required to pay creditors? These are not ways to help you get out of debt. They are expensive payment plans. And if you're in debt already, does it make sense to load yourself up with another payment plan? Zero debt in 90 days gets you out of debt in 90 days, guaranteed. And that's the website you need to visit right now. ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Zero debt in 90 days gets you out of debt without a payment plan and without without attorneys or going to court. ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com is the quickest solution to debt relief on the planet. If you have more than $25,000 in credit card debt, student loans, or difficult mortgage situation, we can help. And we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com.
Great news for pure water lovers. The Big Berkey Water Filter is available once again. And stay tuned to hear about a valuable offer from Berkey Water Filters. Choosing the right water purification system can be a daunting task. That's why BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com shows you a cost and benefit comparison. The Berkey Water Filter is economical, with a single set of filters that can last for 5 to 10 years. Berkey Water Filters are healthy and far superior to other filtration systems. They remove harmful pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, and unhealthy chemicals like chlorine. And Berkey water filter systems are powerful enough to purify both treated and untreated water, like stagnant ponds. Get the gold standard in water filters at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. For a limited time, choose a free shower filter, fluoride filters, or two Sport Berkey bottles with every system purchase. And GCN listeners get 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Details at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com or call 1-877-99-BERKEY. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY.
This is Alex Jones with five good reasons you should consider buying a solar power generator. Number one, new climate legislation could easily double or triple your electric bill. Number two, our new energy czar wants to control how much power your electric company allows you to have. It's true. Total government control of electricity in the name of smart grid technology is coming. Number three, in some areas of the country, the power grid is dangerously overloaded. And now, new socialist legislation is only compounding the problem. Number four, dangerous weather is always a threat to local grids. Every year, thousands of families lose their power from weather-related outages. Number five, a solar power generator provides powerful backup, insurance, and peace of mind. Folks, I really believe in the solar power generators offered by Solutions from Science, one of my oldest sponsors. You can get more information at www.mysolarbackup.com. That's mysolarbackup.com. Remember, the government doesn't own the sun, so go to mysolarbackup.com or call 1-877-327-03.
This is Free Talk Live on the Genesis Communications Network and freetalklive.com. Dial us up at 1-800-259-9231.
And we are here live at the New Hampshire Liberty Forum 2010. It's a huge crowd, hundreds of people, and it's awesome to be here. I mean at the forum, not here in the room.
But both in the room and the forum, Mark, it's good to be here with you. I'm filling in for Ian, of course.
That's Gardner and Mark, and we have with us a very important gentleman, Dr. David Friedman, and we've been talking about all over the board. And, Gardner, you had a line of questioning you were going with, and I just wanted you to continue following up with Dr. Friedman.
Well, David took our call earlier addressing something. I wasn't sure whether he wanted to expand on that, but we had a call a little bit earlier about insurance and so on and the complexity of insurance purchases and things like that, and the cost-benefit analysis seemed very clear that some people want to have a lot of different alternatives and choices in all the different products. Am I wrong, David? And that seems to be...
On the other hand, there are also advantages the other way,
yep.
And you therefore have markets that give both very standardized products and products with lots of
they respond, yes. I'm very interested. We were talking a little bit about the so-called stateless society and so on, and we opened the conversation talking about market failure. And one of the things that fascinates me is that so many people, it's an on-off switch. Well, you know, if markets don't do the right thing, well, obviously government's got to do it. And I know that a major part of what you've described to people is how government exacerbates some of this.
I wouldn't put it in terms of exacerbating, because it's not that it makes the private market failures worse. It's that the same things that occasionally make the private market make the wrong decisions more or less routinely make the political market make the wrong decisions.
Yes.
That the kind of problems economists worry about under the label of market failure in private markets come about when I'm taking an action where a large part of the cost or a large part of the benefit goes to someone else, so I don't take account of that. But in the political system, almost all of the actions we take have that characteristic. One of my standard examples actually is from the judicial system. There is a particular appeals court case, which was one that found a company that made vaccine liable for not doing enough to make sure that people who were vaccinated knew that there was a very tiny risk that the vaccine would give them the illness they were vaccinating against. This was the old polio vaccine, which there was later a later one that wasn't true, but the original polio vaccine. And the case hinged on the question of whether a reasonable consumer might have decided not to get vaccinated if he only knew the things that the company was telling the doctors and nurses, but wasn't making sure the doctors and nurses told the people to be vaccinated. And the court compared the annual risk of getting polio with the one-time risk of getting polio from the shot, found they were about equal, and said, therefore, you might decide not to get it. But, of course, the shot protected you from polio for your lifetime.
More than 1 year.
So the right comparison would be the chance that you'll get polio from the shot versus the chance that you'll get polio in your life if you don't get the shot. That would have been like 30 times as large.
Amazing.
So they made a mistake that I would have said that a bright high school student should be ashamed of. The result of that was that for a while vaccines weren't being made until Congress then stepped in order to deal with the problem because the companies were afraid of liability.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe that that mistake killed fewer than, say, 1,000 people. And yet the judges who made it suffered nothing at all for them.
It's incredible.
But it's true both quite generally. If a congressman tomorrow votes either for or against the health bill that the president is pushing, whether the bill is good or bad, either way, almost all of its consequences, all of its costs will be paid by other people. If it has benefits, its benefits will go to other people. So whereas the standard market situation is the one where you bear most of the cost of what you do, get most of the benefit, and therefore you'll do it if benefits are larger than costs, the standard political situation has no such characteristics. So therefore, market failure would be more common on the political market than on the private market. Now, that doesn't prove you should never have government, because somebody might say, well, that's true in general, but here is some really critical case where I can show that market failure is very serious in the private market, and therefore we need government. Might be true. I don't want to overstate my case. I think one can argue that everything the government does could be replaced by private arrangements, but there are other intelligent and thoughtful people who don't agree with that conclusion.
And those types of conversations are often the most fruitful conversations. I wonder, we're speaking with David Friedman, economist, physicist by training originally, and
DavidDFriedman.com.
DavidDFriedman.com is the website. And Mark, just one more question. I'm very interested. David, oftentimes what we're talking about in economics and conversations in which people might engage you probably seem to be, I'll use a term loosely here, utilitarian in a way. So what we're talking about is the moral aspect of freedom and individuality, and defining the term moral itself. Becomes
what do you mean we? That's not what I'm talking about.
Yes, and this is what I wanted to talk to you about, because people who are listening, they might be talking about cost, benefits, effects. Every one of these instances, we're talking about people involved in this.
Yes.
And I was wondering, when people talk about economics, do you think they lose sight of the moral component of this?
I think what they lose sight of is the fact that costs and benefits are ultimately costs and benefits to people.
Yes.
That I think the very common mistake is they say, when you say there's a cost, you mean there's a number on some corporation's accounting.
Right.
And that's not a real cost. That's interesting only to the extent that it is a signal or a reflection of the fact that somebody had to spend time and effort digging iron ore out of the ground, or that somebody had to not eat an apple in order that it could be made into applesauce. That part of what you learn to understand in studying economics is that prices reflect costs, and that it's therefore the price system is a sort of very elaborate signaling system. And therefore, when the corporation calculates that it costs it $15,000 to build this car, what that means, at least roughly, is that somewhere in the world there are human beings who will bear costs totaling $15,000, whether in hours of labor worked or in other goods they've produced or whatever, in order that the car is built.
So,
and then what the economist says is a well-functioning system is one where the value to the people who value the car is more than that price it gets built, if less than that price it doesn't.
So, David, then how do we look at the question that might be posed to you? Where does the nexus, how do we look at the non-aggression principle that is so popular amongst libertarians within the context of the economic argument, the costs and benefits?
I'm an economist, not a moral philosopher.
That's
one of the reasons is that although, like most people, I have moral views, unlike many libertarians, I don't think I can prove those moral views are correct.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I think a more sensible strategy for persuading people of things is to say, look, your moral views and my moral views have a lot of overlap. All of us think that killing people is a bad idea, that for people to be hungry is unfortunate, that is in a general sense, sort of, almost everybody, utilitarianism literally means saying that human happiness is all that matters. Most people don't really believe that. But most people do believe that human happiness is one of the really big things that matters. So my feeling is that if in economics I can persuade you that legalizing drugs or abolishing the draft or cutting taxes or anything else would on the whole greatly increase human happiness, that will probably persuade you to do it, and I don't have to get into the argument of what you ought to want, which is good because I don't have any really good arguments to show you what you ought to want.
Okay, so the idea of not forcing, really what we're talking about is we don't talk about the means, we talk about the ends. In this case,
I don't think that's right. We don't judge the means, we judge the means by their consequence.
Okay, very good.
What I'm arguing for is not literally utilitarianism, but I'm making consequentialist arguments in that I'm saying that when you want to defend the free market, or when you want to defend the idea that people shouldn't coerce each other, the way I want to defend it is showing that if they do that, bad things happen, rather than by appealing to someone's intuition that coercion is bad.
Thank you, Dr. David Friedman. That's daviddfriedman.com. And we'll be back. Free Talk Live, New Hampshire Liberty Forum.
Have you been thinking about starting a website? I'm going to tell you about a great offer from HostGator. HostGator is a worldwide leader for web hosting, and they make it easy to get your own .com domain name. You create your very own website with their free site builder tools and templates. Use the coupon code FTL, that's FTL as in Free Talk Live, and sign up at HostGator.com to receive your first month completely free. Whether you want a personal blog or a complete e-commerce business website, let the experts at HostGator.com host you.
Do you have hair or skin problems? Are you sensitive to fragrances or dyes? Quit suffering. Quit trying the latest, new and improved potions. Try Unicure Hair and Skin Conditioner. It's been sold in top salons since 1973, and I've been using it for the past year, and I love it. Unicure's Hair and Skin Conditioner's gentle, greaseless formula is fragrance and color free. If you have hair or skin, you need Unicure. Call 888-UNICURE or visit unicure.com. 888-UNICURE. Unicure.com.
Is it safe to breathe anymore? Crowded public places, global pandemics, and news reports of potential new strains of bacteria and viruses make you wonder, what if there was a germ-killing nasal spray that acted almost like hand sanitizer for your nose? There is. It's called Sinofresh Homeopathic Nasal Spray, and it's a proven germ killer. Sinofresh is a revolutionary doctor-recommended nasal spray that kills a broad spectrum of viruses, bacteria, molds, and fungi on contact in your nose. Sinofresh causes no drug interactions, no loss of smell, no rebound congestion, contains no alcohol, is non-habit forming, and is safe for daily use. Sinofresh must be a part of your family survival plan. Go to GCNlive.com now and click on the Sinofresh banner. The first 1,000 customers to click on the Sinofresh banner and purchase Sinofresh antiseptic nasal spray are instantly registered to win a free 24-bottle case. Go to GCNlive.com and click on Sinofresh. Breathe free, breathe safe. Use Sinofresh. It works.
For safety, you lock doors, set alarms, buy antivirus software, maybe even have a watchdog. Do you care as much about your air and water? Lock out harmful poisons from entering your body with airandaqua.com. Using purification devices from airandaqua.com allows you to enjoy safety and security with every breath you make and every sip you take. For free shipping on purchases, discounts, and newsletters, visit airandaqua.com or call 866-380-2782. Shop airandaqua.com and purify your life.
We the People grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a silver dollar in a book explains our monetary system. Call for your copy at 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
The mighty Roman soldier was given a daily ration of fermented fish oil. The stoic Scandinavian Viking had a drum of fermenting cod livers outside the door of his home. And Grandma always had cod liver oil in the cupboard. Today, Green Pasture Products, a family-owned business, provides high-quality, nutrient-dense cod and other fish liver oils made in the same way they've been made throughout history prior to 1850, through fermentation. Cold fermented cod liver oil from Green Pasture is rich in vitamins A, D, E, K, omega-3, omega-9s, and more. But no man-made nutrients, only what the fish provides. Green Pasture's products are clean, independently tested for impurities, made in the USA, and come in capsules or liquids. Receive a 20% discount off your first order at greenpasture.org and be sure to enter coupon code radio at checkout. Hurry, 20% discount only good for a limited time. Call 402-858-4818. That's 402-858-4818 or go to greenpasture.org.
You're listening to Free Talk Live on the Genesis Communications Network and freetalklive.com. Call in at 1-800-259-9231.
Live, 1-800-259-9231. It's Mark with you.
And Gar.
And we're live here at the New Hampshire Liberty Forum 2010, and it is awesome. I want to tell you real quick about Jurisdictionary at jurisdictionary.com. They, you know, every contest involves rules, and every winner knows the rules and how to use them to their advantage. Jurisdictionary teaches you how to take your cases to court without an expensive attorney, without all that investment. Their claim is that the average eighth grader can learn it in less than 24 hours. So it's just a few pages, a few dozen pages to learn, and you'll understand the court system at jurisdictionary.com. The course is $250, and you know I'm working through it right now, and I do find it easy to understand. Jurisdictionary.com.
Well, we continue from the New Hampshire Liberty Forum's great, great extravaganza here in Nashville, New Hampshire at the Crown Plaza Hotel. Everybody having a good time?
Yeah!
With a live studio audience, Ian is away. And once again, thank you for letting me sit in, Mark. And we have our next guest. Marco, go for it, my man.
Radley Balco, you not only do you work for, you have your own blog, The Agitator, and I'm drawing a blank. Is it Reason Magazine you work for?
Yep, I work for Reason Magazine. That's correct.
You used to work for Fox Magazine, Fox News.
I had a column with Fox News before Reason. I worked for the Cato Institute.
Okay, cool. Now you've been covering thoroughly, extensively, the rise of the police state in America. Popular Mechanics Magazine covered this. I think it was last year. I'm a subscriber. I get it. And this is trickling down to the average person, and they're, you know, people are becoming more and more concerned that the cops could make a mistake and bust through their door for some kind of drug crime. Tell us about some of the things you found.
Well, I wrote a paper for Cato on this in 2006, and what I was trying to do is show just the dramatic rise in the use of SWAT teams and the use of these sort of paramilitary-type forces. And what I found, there's a professor at the University of Eastern Kentucky who's been surveying the use of SWAT teams since about the early 1980s, And what he found is in the late 70s, there were about 200 to 300 SWAT deployments per year in the U.S., mostly for hostage situations, riots, barricades, that kind of thing, which is what SWAT teams were originally designed to respond to. In the early 80s, when the Reagan administration really started taking the drug war very seriously, literally, I guess, we saw a lot of military equipment going from the Pentagon to local police departments across the country in some of these surplus programs. The number of SWAT teams jumped from about 200 to 300 in the late 70s to about the early 80s, we're up to about 2,000 to 3,000. And Krask estimates that now we're up to about 50,000 SWAT deployments per year.
Wow.
In the U.S.
Holy man.
So that is a massive increase from 200 to 300 to over 50,000 in about 40 years. There's an old Cold War saying. It's commonly attributed to Winston Churchill, but I've done some research and found he didn't. There's no record of him actually saying it. But I think it does show the change of mentality. And the saying is that democracy means that when there's a knock on the door at 3 a.m., it's probably the milkman. And it was a saying that sort of distinguished the way we do things here with the way they did them in the Iron Curtain.
Mm-hmm.
And not only does that saying really no longer apply anymore, the government doesn't even bother knocking at this point. The no-knock raid has become way too prevalent for nonviolent crimes, for low-level drug crimes.
Now, one would think that SWAT teams are you know, maybe necessary if you've got yourself a terrible murderer guy holed up in a house and maybe he's got a hostage or something like that, then you need a SWAT team. But it seems like 99 of them are used to bust people for drugs.
Yeah, I mean, there is an appropriate use for SWAT teams, and that's when you're defusing an already violent situation. So you have someone who presents an immediate, imminent threat to other people or to the community. Then a SWAT team's appropriate because you're using violence to sort of bring down an already violent situation. When you use a SWAT team on a non-violent drug offender or other consensual crimes, we're seeing SWAT teams used to break up poker games now.
There was
white-collar crimes.
Was it in 2007 where an optometrist who had a football pool going was, I'm going to say he was accidentally, I don't know what he, if he was talking crap to the cops or what, or while he was, as I understand it, on his knees, handcuffed, shot in the head in Virginia.
This is the Sal Colosi case. Yeah, Sal Colosi was betting on some college football games in a bar. An undercover police detective with the Fairfax County Police Department overheard them, basically befriended them, started placing bets with Sal, kept track until Sal placed enough bets with this cop to trigger the Virginia State gambling statute, at which point they sent the SWAT team. And Colosi actually was...
Because they couldn't have just said, you're under arrest.
No, they of course had to send the SWAT team. And they, as Colosi was walking out, one of the officers shot him directly in the heart and killed him. The police say that the door to the SUV that the cop was getting out of recoiled and bumped his elbow, causing the gun to fire to score a direct hit. That's implausible, I think, in a lot of ways. The Colosi family, and I think this is probably the more likely explanation, said Colosi had a cell phone in his hand when he was shot, and they think the cop mistook that for a gun.
Yeah.
But the point is that, I don't think the cop intended to murder Sal Colosi, but the point is that these raids are so volatile, and they're so confrontational, and there's such a low margin for error.
Right. When you've got
they should only be used in these sort of extreme kind of dangerous situations.
When you've got a police officer with an MP5 submachine gun in his hands, it's a lot shorter distance to be able to fire that into somebody's heart accidentally than it is to be able to pull your service Glock out of your holster and, then aim it and fire it at somebody.
And the other problem here is there's a huge double standard. The cop that shot and killed Colosi got 2 weeks of unpaid leave, which is actually rare. They usually get paid suspension. And so when a cop makes one of these mistakes, they're almost always forgiven because of the volatile nature of the raid, which in a lot of ways is understandable, except, the police created those volatile.
Exactly.
But when a person inside a house mistakes a cop for an armed intruder, there to do them harm or do their family harm, they aren't given that same sort of consideration. And the double standard is really exacerbated when you consider that the whole purpose of these raids, the police will tell you this, is to take people off guard, to surprise them, to confuse them, bewilder them, get to them before they can grab a gun and fire back. But you can't sort of have it both ways, right? You can't say we have to use these tactics to scare people and confront them and surprise them, and then when they make a mistake and think we're intruding, criminals there to do them harm, and they shoot one of us, well, they should have known we were the cops all along. I mean, you can't make those arguments side by side, although they do.
That was the Corey Mays case. There's been many circumstances where people have busted, police have busted into the wrong house and in some cases, killed, injured, harmed people.
Yeah, there was, I mean, there have been cases just this year. There was, well, actually 2 years ago in Lima, Ohio. And here's the case where they had the right house. This was a drug dealer whose house they broke into. But one cop shot the drug dealer's two dogs, and the other cop was going up the stairs and mistook the sound of gunfire of his colleague shooting the dogs for hostile gunfire, saw some movement in a bedroom and opened fire into the bedroom. In the bedroom, there was a 22-year-old mother on her knees, as the police were saying, holding her son. She was Tarika Wilson. This is in Lima, Ohio. She was killed by the cop. Her son's hand was blown off. So here's a case where they had the right house. This was a drug dealer, but you still have this collateral damage. And that's really how the government views these tragedies. These people are collateral damage. This is the drug war.
It's very faceless.
It really is. I mean, these people are the price we have to pay to pretend that we're keeping our society free of drugs.
So tell people real quick about the Corey Mays case, because I'm sure that not everybody knows about it.
Sure. Corey May was in 2001, the day after Christmas, was home with his 18-month-old daughter in Prentice, Mississippi. He was asleep in front of the TV. He lived in a duplex, had just moved into the duplex with his girlfriend and their daughter to sort of make a life for themselves. They lived next to a known to the police drug dealer, a guy named Jamie Smith. The police had gotten an informant, who was a real piece of work we found out later, but the informant had said that he had bought drugs from the duplex. So they got a warrant, and, you know, it's not really clear what happened. There is a warrant for both sides of the duplex, but Corey May's name is nowhere on the warrant, neither is his girlfriend's name. Jamie Smith's name does appear on the warrant. Anyway, the police raid both sides of the duplex. Corey May had no prior criminal record, had basically a burnt roach in the house that would have gotten him a $50 fine under any other circumstances. He wakes up at 12:30 in the morning to someone trying to kick down the door to his house. He runs into the back bedroom where his daughter is, and grabs a handgun that he had from a nightstand, lays down on the floor next to his daughter, sort of hoping the intruders would go away. They actually don't. They come around to the back. They kick open the back door. First cop in, Corey shoots three times, hits the cop once, and went under the bulletproof vest, pierced the cop's abdomen, and the cop died on the way to the hospital. The cop's name was Ron Jones. He happened to be the son of the town police chief in Prentice, Ron Jones Sr. Ron Jones was white. Corey May was black. This is Jefferson Davis County, Mississippi, which is part of Mississippi. This really racism. Not only is it prevalent, it's sort of a suffocating, pervasive part of everyday life. And Corey really didn't have a chance. I mean, he was convicted of capital murder, which is the intentional killing of a police officer and sentenced to death.
Radley Balco, theagitator.com.
Yep.
And Reason Magazine.
Yep.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Radley.
Awesome work, man.
Yeah, it's pretty steady, you know.
Notorious space pirate Phoebus Crumb had retired to a frontier world, only to see it destroyed by raiders. Now, Crumb is given a new ship, a new crew, and a dangerous new mission. Infiltrate deep within enemy territory and destroy a deadly dreadnought that threatens the balance of galactic power. Follow the illustrated adventures of L. Neil Smith's Phoebus Crumb online now at bigheadpress.com/PK.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.